This episode of All Have Another is brought to you by Generation UCAN. UCAN provides you with the energy you've been looking for all your training needs. It helps keep your blood sugar stable, and the key is steady energy. So their powders and bars are powered by a superstarch, and it's a revolutionary carbohydrate originally created for kids with a life-threatening low blood sugar. You guys need to go to generationucan.com to find out more about that story and how the company originated. So I started using this product last summer when I was training for my fall marathon, and I had great success in how it made me feel on my long runs, and I can't wait to start using it again post-baby this time around. I have several athletes who I coach who also use this product, and they're finding great success as well. Not to mention, it's the go-to fuel for Boston Marathon winner and four-time Olympian Meb Keflezighi. You guys, if Meb's using it, I think that it's legit, right? I'm super excited to offer all listeners of All Have Another this special 15% off discount at UCAN stores. You guys just go to generationucan.com/another, use promo code another all caps to get your 15% discount, and send me a tweet. Let me know how you're loving it once you try it out. You can find me at Lindsay Hine, and you can find Generation UCAN at Jen UCAN. Thanks so much, Generation UCAN. Hi everybody, welcome to All Have Another. I'm your host Lindsay, and I'm so excited you're joining me today. This is a show where I bring on motivating and inspiring women, and today you are listening to episode 36. Today we're talking with Phoebe Wright. I was so excited when Phoebe agreed to come on the show and chat with me. If you guys follow Phoebe on social media, you know that she's really funny and relatable. You guys can follow her at PHE 800, and you'll know what I'm talking about. So Phoebe was a walk-on at the University of Tennessee, and she proved herself time and time again through her collegiate career. She has two consecutive third place finishes at the USA Outdoor Championships in 2009 and 2010 while she was competing at Tennessee, and she also has wins at the NCAA Indoor and Outdoor Championships. She was also a five-time SEC champion, three times in the 800, and twice in the distance medley relay. Phoebe went on to run for Nike, she still does, and she's competed in the Olympic trials in 2008, 2012, and this past year in 2016. She's an 800 meter runner, and I just had a blast talking to her. We talk about how she is now in pharmacy school full-time, how she has dreams of one day maybe becoming a copywriter, and her passion and the energy that she puts into hoping that one day track and field will be a clean sport. I had a blast talking with Phoebe, and I know you guys are gonna love this episode and love Phoebe when you're done hearing our conversation. Before we get started talking with Phoebe, I wanted to let you guys know that my son, Russell Eugene Hine, was welcomed into our family last Thursday, weighing 7 pounds, 11 ounces. He is our third son, so we are really excited to have him home and in our arms. And if you follow me on social media, you already know that. And I want to say thank you to all of you guys who have already given our family love and encouragement during this time. If you are a regular listener to this show, I would so appreciate it if you would head over to iTunes and give me a rating and review. It's the absolute best way for people who don't know about the show to find us. November 18th coming up is my holiday gift guide episode. I'm super excited about this. I have a couple more spots open. If you are a small business or company that is interested in getting involved in that episode, shoot me an email, lindsay@lindsayhine.com. And also, if you are a company or small business who has interest in speaking to this audience that I get to talk to every single week, send me an email, lindsay@lindsayhine, and we'll talk about how we can partner up. You guys make sure you're following me on Twitter, @lindsayhine, and Instagram, lindsayhine626, so we can connect. All right, you guys, let's go ahead and enjoy this conversation with Phoebe. So we're talking to Phoebe Wright. How are you? What's going on with your life today?
Yeah, I'm so good. I am about to go on a run here in like an hour, so I'm prepping with the morning cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah. So is it only 9 where you are right now?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, because you're in Seattle.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad that we had a audio malfunction because I got to meet your boyfriend, Steve, right?
Yep.
This lady, I can't hear this lady.
As soon as I said that, I was like, oh, God, this is just bad. She can hear us.
Well, you know what I thought? Anytime someone calls me a lady or a man, I'm like, do they think I'm like 45? I'm not that old yet.
Whoops.
That's totally fine, though. So what are you going to go run?
I got a long run today, so like 10 miles.
Okay, that's what your long runs look like?
Yep.
Awesome. What are you... Okay, let's first start with, can you tell everybody like where you grew up and a little intro to Phoebe?
Sure. Yeah, so I grew up in Chattanooga in Tennessee, and I was a completely average athlete all through high school, and I ended up walking on to the University of Tennessee track team and kind of accidentally got good and got so good that by the time I graduated, Nike offered to sponsor me to run post-collegiately. And so I've been running post-collegiately for like 6 years or so now. And I'm like debating how long. It's gotten to the point in my career where I'm figuring out how many more years I want to run. And it's kind of like going year by year. And so I'm prepping for this year like it's my last year as a professional runner, like as a solely professional runner.
Okay, so how old are you now?
28.
Okay, you're 28. So, okay, I have a couple follow-up questions here. You're from Chattanooga. I recently went there last summer for the first time.
Isn't it the greatest place on earth?
I mean, yeah. Well, my husband and I were looking for somewhere to go to get away from our kids and just have like a little anniversary thing, and people kept recommending it. And we had been to Asheville like many times. And I didn't know that Chattanooga was kind of a hipstery, cool little place now. It kind of reminded me of Asheville.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it is.
Was it like that growing up? Or, I mean, has it really changed a lot?
It's changed so much. I would say it started changing maybe 15 years ago. It started becoming cool and pretty, and they started... investing a lot of money into the parks and into the development of the city. And every year I go back, it's just way better than I even remember it. So,
well, lots of good running too. Like lots of cool trails.
It is the best if you're an outdoorsy person.
Yeah.
And you like Southern people, which I do. So,
yeah, we definitely got some fun. I don't even remember what the trails were called, but we definitely did some climbing and running out there. That was really fun. So here's my other question. So you say you are an average runner, and I looked things up and everything. Like I was like, whoa, she walked on to Tennessee. That's crazy. What does average mean though? Because I consider myself when I was in high school to be an average runner. So I'm just trying to put it into perspective.
Gotcha. Okay. So, my freshman and sophomore years of high school, I would struggle to run a 3-minute half mile, which, is like what some women hold for ultra marathons, like right. That pace. I couldn't even hold it for a half mile. And, I got a coach that I jived with halfway through high school, and he kind of like sat me down and he was like, okay, what are you doing? You're just out here jogging. You're going to have to start trying. And I did see some little bits of success under that coach and then the coach that I had after him. And I ended up being fourth, I think, in state at Tennessee, but Tennessee is like kind of a weak state in terms of country development. So, like to give you a perspective, I started calling college coaches my senior year and saying, I want to run in college. And I talked to this really well-known college coach in Colorado, Coach Wetmore. I instantly was like, I'm going to Colorado and I am going to be coached by Coach Wetmore because he's the best coach. And I just learned that trying hard can get you some success. So maybe if I keep trying hard, then I'll be really successful. And this is the guy to do it. And then when I was talking on the phone with him, he was like, okay, to give you a perspective, if you take your half mile time, your best half mile time, and double it, so you're running a mile now, you still wouldn't make it to the national championships. And our team is about making it to the national championships. Mm-hmm. So when he said that, I was like, Well, at the time, I was like, well, if I can run that fast in half a mile, can't you teach me to run that fast in a mile?
What was the half mile time at that time? Because this is when you were a senior, right?
It was, yeah. So it was like 217, somewhere around 220. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was the first time that I realized how fast women actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I was like in a completely different ozone than them, but I thought that I could work up to that ozone.
So you walked down to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And what did that look like? I mean, as a freshman, were you struggling to keep up with everybody? And then how did you then go on to be so successful?
Yeah, it was a nightmare, actually, the first year. I was so bad. I couldn't even keep up. I would get dropped halfway through the warm-up. And every muscle on my body was sore. It felt like somebody just beat me with a baseball bat every time I woke up. And I couldn't, it was just, I used to love running in high school because of the social thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I didn't have that social thing. So my self-worth was just totally non-existent. And I had no friends because I was spending all my time running, but I wasn't fast enough to keep up to make friends with all the other people on the team. And it was just like really a nightmare.
I feel like that would be so intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a lot of people ask me why I didn't quit. And I wish that I had some inspirational story about how, like, I just really believed in myself or I knew I could do it. And I didn't. I had no confidence in my abilities at that point. I mean, when you get proof every day that you aren't a very good runner, it's hard to have confidence in your abilities. But the reason why I didn't quit is just because I didn't want to go to my coach and have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just sounded more intimidating than getting beat in a workout.
Uh-huh. So what year did you really start finding success? Was it your junior year?
So actually at the very end of my freshman year, like one of the last races, I had this massive breakthrough race. And I think if that race didn't happen, so it was at a dual invite at Vanderbilt. And I think that if that race didn't happen, I wouldn't be running.
Mm-hmm.
I just needed, like, at that point, I was so down in the dumps that I needed something massive to give me hope. So I ended up PRing in the 1500 by like 30 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was insane. Yeah. The only reason I did that is because my coach was telling me that we aren't going to take a 4x15 to pin relays because we don't have a fourth leg. Because I was supposed to be the fourth leg. He was trying to, like, amp me up to be the fourth leg. And if we didn't have a 4x15, this girl on our team named Rolanda Bell wouldn't get to run at pin relays. And she is all, like, that's been one of her biggest goals is to race at pin relays. And I didn't have any friends. And I was like, this could be a way that I prove that I, like, care about these women and that I want to be included in their group. So I just, like, laid it all out there at this dual meet. And, that was the exact hope that I needed to get me excited about running again.
And that was you said that was the end of your freshman year?
Yep.
Okay, that's awesome. So I've read through the USA Track and Field, your bio and all that, but of all of these race experiences in college, two questions, what race are you most proud of and what was the most memorable? Probably the one you're most proud of, right?
So no, the one that I'm most proud of is Nationals outdoor my senior year because I had so much pressure and it wasn't the good kind of pressure. It was the, like, you're expected to win this meet. And if you don't win it, then you messed up. This is all on you. And, carrying that type of personal responsibility is, I mean, nobody wants that. Nobody wants
right.
that type of pressure. And, so I lined up, I wasn't even really excited to race. I was just thinking, like, I need to get this done. I need to stay poised and execute like a CIA agent and like, just take care of business. And it wasn't really fun at all, which made it, like, not memorable to me. But looking back on my whole career, seeing how much pressure I felt and how I just handled it in stride, that would be the race that I'm the most proud of. But the most memorable races are the ones that are, like, tension building and fun, and you have no idea if you're going to win. And, like, if you think about memorable football games or memorable basketball games, like, they're buzzer beaters. There's just, like, so much unknown and excitement and buildup. And the race that stands out for me for that is a relay at Penn Relays. It's actually a 4x15. Mm. I was anchoring it, so I had to, it, like, the pressure to win was on me. But as an 800er, like, I'm not expected to win this race. So I'm just running straight for team glory here. And when I got the baton, I was in the lead, but had two of the most stellar athletes I've ever seen on my heels. And every lap, I was just, like, biding my time. And there was a whole Villanova section that was cheering for one of the girls behind me that was going, "Let's go, Nova." And I remember, like, telling myself, like, "No, they're cheering for you. Like, pretend they're cheering for you." And I was just drawing from the "Let's go, Nova" crowd. I was like, "Yes, this is your glory." And even down to the last 50 meters, I had no idea if I was going to win or not. It was just like we were having muscle failure all the way to the line. So those are the races that are most memorable to me, is the ones that are, like, unexpected.
Do you feel like now as a professional runner compared to, you know, running in college, like, do you handle going into these big races differently, like, mentally, you know? How do you calm your nerves?
The nerves, so once you do it for so long, the nerves kind of, they don't ever go away, but you just handle them better. Mm-hmm. Like when you're having trouble eating on race day, mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, this is just part of the thing. Like, this is normal. This is what we do. And so all of, like, the nervous things where sometimes when you're younger, you're like, oh my gosh, I feel nervous. This is bad. And then you start, like, spiraling out of control in this stress loop. When you get older, you're like, oh, right, this is my body preparing to race. These are completely normal feelings and completely normal habits. And you just kind of manage it a lot better. Like, you aren't scared of nerves anymore. So it doesn't feel as traumatizing, I guess.
Whenever I watch big races on TV, like, you know, the trials and all that, I always look at you girls lining up and I'm like, she looks nervous. She looks excited. She looks like she wants to kick ass. Like, I always try to, like, read faces.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think about that when you're toeing the line? Like, do you like, look at your competition and think anything about them? Or are you just solely focused on what you're doing there?
You're mostly focused on yourself. But what's funny is, like, you race these same women 20 times a year.
Yeah.
So you kind of learn their racing style. Like, I would say... So I like watching Kate Grace.
Okay.
Total. She's the bomb. But on the line, she looks like a tiger that is ready to kill you. And then you look at Molly Beckwith and she's smiling and like she's about to play a game of tag and she just knows that she's going to win.
I totally see that.
Yeah. So it is cool to see where people draw their motivations from.
So, well, let's talk about the trials 2016. So you ran in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me just about the whole trials experience? I mean, right before we hopped on, I read the article you wrote in Women's Running about the post-race experience and all that, and your thoughts leading up to going into the race and, you know, becoming an Olympian and all that stuff. But can you tell me a little bit about what that experience was like for you, the whole thing?
Right. So I went into it thinking this is probably my last Olympic trials. And I want no matter what, I want to have the right mindset, because it was my third Olympic trials. And in 08, I was in the happy to be here club and didn't take it seriously at all and didn't believe in myself and just was knocked out in the first round. In 2012, I was like super wound up, and it was on the unhealthy side of nervous. And then, so this time I wanted to like have the fun aspect of competing, but I also wanted to have the seriousness and the self-confidence that I had in 2012. So I did that well. I don't know what happened that during the finals, but I knew like 30 seconds into the race that it wasn't happening. Like I was giving it my all, and it just wasn't going to be, it wasn't my day.
Did you, cause I read that article you also wrote, like picking your favorites before all the, you know, before the trials, not just the 800, but your other races too. Was that, and I remember reading it before the trials even thinking she's running and then she's picking her favorites though of the girls in her race. And I just thought that was so interesting.
Yeah. I put myself as a dark horse, but, in the women's 800, but yeah, so the reason why I do that is because I've gotten to the point in my career where I care more about the sport and more about the relationships that I have with these women than I do about, like, winning. When I was young, winning was it. I would sacrifice relationships to win. I isolated myself. If you go back, I didn't even have social media before 2013 because I was just in my own bubble. And when I started running bad, I had to kind of shift my priorities, and it was a good, healthy shift for me. It might not be the best for my career. Like, the jury's still out in terms of actual performance. Like, maybe you do have to be kind of small-minded, I guess, and like laser focused. But at this point in my career, that's not what I'm about. I'm about like creating fans for the sport, and there's not a whole lot of people who have my platform who could create fans for the sport.
So true. Do you feel like it's easy to make friends with the girls you're competing with, or do you find some people are a little bit more closed off than others?
Yeah, it just depends on the personality. Right. And a lot of times you find it's easier to make friends in an event that's not yours. So, I have a lot of 400 hurdle friends and miler friends, but the 800 is kind of a weird breed because, it's short enough to where, like even if you get beat, you think that you can line up tomorrow and beat them. Because they're still in your, like, you can still, I don't know, reach out and touch them, usually. But it also is distancing enough to where you feel like you can outwork your competition. So, I don't know. 800ers are weird. We can just, like, let things roll off our back a little more easily than other event groups, it seems. Like, milers, a lot of milers don't, aren't buddy-buddy like the 800 group is.
That's interesting. So as an 800 runner, though, well, like you said, when we started our conversation, you were going to go out for a 10-mile long run. What's your weekly mileage look like when you're training for a specific, like an 800 race?
In season, it would be maybe 40 to 50 miles, and it would be pretty intense work. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And then weights, like two or three times a week?
Yep. Probably twice a week of regular weights, and then one day a week of plyos.
Do you cross train? Like, do you swim or do anything like that ever?
Yeah, I try and cross train like a couple hours a week usually, just because. Well, for me, so swimming is nice because like it's almost therapeutic because you just like I literally cannot think about anything other than like staying alive while I'm in the pool. So that's like a mental reset for whatever I'm doing. So I mostly swim just for the mental benefits of it.
I totally feel you. I try to swim like two times a week, and it is definitely a therapeutic. And it's so nice to your body. Like,
right?
There's no pounding, and it's a full body workout. It feels so good. Yep. I do get bored, though, moving anywhere longer than like 1,000 yards, because I'm just like, all right, I'm over this.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about when you decided to turn pro. I read the article. You wrote all the lists of what people should consider when they're thinking about turning pro and all that good stuff. What did that season of your life look like as far as you're graduating school, trying to decide if you want to do that? How did you make that decision?
So I knew that I wanted to run post-collegiately no matter what, because I knew that 2012 was going to be, I was going to be primed to make that team. Mm-hmm. So I had committed, regardless of what my financial situation looked like, I committed to staying in the sport until 2012. And then when I ran nationals my senior year, I had my agent picked out that I wanted to sign with. And he was basically like, if you win nationals, you'll make a living. If you don't, you won't. Mm. So, I ended up winning. Like, I was on a mission, like, to win. I was like, if you win, this is going to make your life a little bit easier for the next 2 years. Like, that's what I was thinking. And Nike signed me. And I basically stayed with my college coach. I stayed with what was working. So, like, I had improved for the past 3 years. I jived with my coach. And I basically tried to mimic the exact same environment that I had in college for my professional career.
Did you always think you wanted to go with Nike, or was that kind of just, that's what happened?
So yeah, I wish that I could, the whole going pro thing. I didn't realize it until years later, but nobody was really in my corner. Mm. And so I was just getting everybody's agenda kind of put onto me. And I just kind of like didn't critically think or I just didn't ask myself any questions or ask anybody any questions, really, and just kind of did what I was told.
So once you're signed on with a certain company, what does that look like as far as like, okay, I'm signed with this company. Do you sign a contract for 2 years, or how does that look?
Yep. So your agent negotiates the length of the contract. So if you have a good salary that doesn't have reductions, you want it to be as long as possible.
Okay.
But if you have a terrible salary that has reductions, you want it to be as short as possible. Once you sign the contract, for the term of that contract, you're locked in. You can't, like, you are with that brand, you are with that salary, you're locked in. It's hard to change anything about that.
So when you train with other girls, or I guess guys, you could train with guys too, do you train with people that are also running for Nike, or can you train with anybody else?
So it depends on the group and mostly the coach, really. Mm-hmm. So Nike has a couple coaches, and they pay those coaches to coach Nike athletes.
Okay.
So like the Bowerman Track Club, mm-hmm. Oregon Track Club, and Oregon Project. Those are all exclusively Nike. They don't allow outsiders.
Okay.
The Brooks Beast Track Club was started in Seattle, and they were more receptive to having outside brands train with the group because they needed to establish their group and be able to recruit athletes to the group. So they allowed me to hire the coach separately from the group. So I just paid Danny Mackey separately, and then got to use his coaching in the training group. But that's like not the norm. Most of the time, the coach and group is exclusive.
Isn't Phoebe so fun to chat with? I had a blast, and I hope you guys are really enjoying this conversation. Before we continue our conversation, I want to thank Generation UCAN for sponsoring this episode. You guys, if you are looking for a legit way to fuel your runs, check out Generation UCAN. This is a product that keeps your blood sugar stable, which is so important in training. It's the best way to redefine the way you fuel. in a more proactive approach instead of waiting until you feel low. All UCAN products are powered by superstarch and they're currently available in powders and bars. I have seen the success of their products personally, and I hope that you guys will take advantage of the special offer they are offering to podcast listeners of All Have Another. Just go to generationucan.com/another and use promo code another in all caps and you'll get 15% off on your order. Go check it out. Let me know what you think. Thank you so much, Generation UCAN, for sponsoring this episode of All Have Another. Now, this is a random question back to your 10-mile run. Is that an easy run? What pace will you run that at?
Well, today, since this is my longest run in a while, it's going to be pretty easy. It'll probably start at like 7:45 pace, and then maybe get down to like high 6-minute pace, so 6:50s.
Okay.
Once I get like pretty fit, so in December when I have a decent amount of mileage under my belt and I'm going for, I don't know, 70 minutes or so, I'll still start at like 7:45 pace just to warm up, and then I'll get cruising down to like 6:20s maybe.
Do you typically warm up at that pace?
Yeah, that's my like go-to jog normal.
It's like how I feel comfortable.
Yep.
What will you be training for when you're building up in December?
So I'll kind of have an abbreviated track season because I'm a full-time student now, whereas last year I was only a part-time student. So I won't travel to many far meets, but I'll probably do all the UW meets and do indoor USAs. So that's like first step on the competition schedule.
Okay, so you told me in your email you are starting your second year of pharmacy school.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like as a professional athlete to be taking that on as well as training?
I love it. I love it. Because you can only train for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours a day without hurting yourself. So that leaves you with a lot of other time during the day to do things. And if you're going to do things, you need things that you're not on your feet and are flexible. Mm-hmm. And school is the bomb for that. Plus, I have a pet theory that like focus is a skill, and it's a really useful skill to have in running and in racing specifically. So if you're practicing focusing while you're not running, like focusing on something else, but focus is focus, then that skill kind of bleeds over into the running aspect of your life.
Why did you decide to go into pharmacy school?
I've just always loved science and especially drugs to help depression and I don't know, mental disorders mostly. So I thought about doing the research route, but in research, if you go for a PhD, you get so pigeonholed into whatever tiny, tiny subject you study. And so pharmacy school kind of makes more practical sense in terms of like career decisions.
That's interesting that you're so interested in the like the antidepressant drugs and all that. And I say that because I've always had some like postpartum anxiety after I have my babies. And I feel like doctors always want to give me an antidepressant. And I don't want to take an antidepressant because it's my anxiety feels so temporary, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have opinions on that? Just curious since you're studying it.
Yes. So from what I've noticed is like anxiety and depression, there's like a threshold where like at some point you do need medical help.
Uh-huh.
But I think that most people, and it's like most people are before that threshold. They just think that they're past it. But it's really hard to like go to therapy or to take time to try to learn how to manage your anxiety, because that takes, I don't know, it takes a month probably to rewire your brain into like getting receptive to change, you know?
Right.
But those are more long-term self-helping. Like, it's worth it. It's worth your time to go to therapy to try and fix it, or whatever you find is therapeutic to help it. So, like, I don't know, maybe it's swimming, maybe it's yoga. Like, take a second and figure out where your anxiety is coming from and what you can do to manage it, like that's going to help you out way more in the long term. But a lot of people don't have time for that, or they aren't into that, or they don't know that that option exists. Mm-hmm. So a pill is like an easier fix, I guess.
Yeah. One of the doctors I talked to, this was like 2 years ago after my second baby, she was suggesting the cognitive behavioral therapy because it's like, it takes longer to get it going, but it is a long-term fix. And especially if it's something that you're willing to stay invested in, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think it's better for all parties to do that. I don't know why it's not valued in our society. I don't know.
Because I think, oh my gosh, like what if I would have jumped on it and started, not that there's anything wrong with taking the antidepressant, but like started taking it after my first son and I was like still on it four or five years later. Like I don't want to be always on it if I just have these short bouts of anxiety. So.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting. So do you think that you'll ever, well, maybe not as a professional athlete, but maybe, I don't know. Do you think you'll ever hop on the marathon train?
No, I'm like actually kind of terrible at long distance. Sprinting is my bread and butter, and I just do long distance because some like almost every coach I've talked to says that it will help my 800. So like today is going to be a grind. If I could, if my body just really thrived at distances, I would totally be on marathon train. But right now, I don't have any desire.
So you don't think even in 10 years you'd be like, maybe I'll run one for fun?
Nah.
Okay. Interesting. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Ooh. Probably you are the sum of your five best friends. So your five current best friends are like the summation of your personality. So it's really important to be aware of who's in your inner circle.
That is really good advice because people can be energy suckers or energy givers.
Yep.
Is boyfriend Steve one of your five?
Of course. He's probably taking up four of the five slots.
Now, does he run with you?
Yeah. Yeah, he ran in college and I'm trying to convince him to go on this 10 miler right now, but he's a little out of shape, so he's wheeling and dealing for 5 miles.
So, yeah. So is he right now, if you guys were to go out and race a mile, would you beat him?
Yeah.
Okay.
He would disagree with that, but yes.
You're going to have to do that. If you could have coffee or a cocktail and you can choose. Which one? Who? And you could have it with anybody in the world. Who would it be with?
A cocktail with Amy Poehler.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, she's hilarious and wise. You can't beat that.
Have you read her book?
Yep.
Do you read all the funny girl books like Mindy Kaling?
Yes.
Me too.
Yes, I love The Bloggess.
Ooh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's so funny. Her first book is hilarious.
Oh, wait. Mindy's?
Oh, no. The Bloggess is Let's Pretend This Never Happened. Oh. Like, I can't read it in public because I'll be laughing too hard.
Is that Amy Poehler?
No, it's this chick named Jenny Lawson. But she has a famous website called The Bloggess. She's just a writer. She's, like, not famous at all. So, but she's so funny.
I'm going to have to look her up because I've never heard of her, and I'm kind of obsessed with comedy, so that sounds really interesting to me.
Oh, yeah.
I just started reading Amy Schumer's book.
Oh, yeah. I was going to get that on tape because she has, like, a nice voice, so I want her to read it to me.
Well, I was reading, I started, and then I was, like, reading it in the middle of the night because one of my kids was crying, and I was, like, just letting them cry it out, and I was trying to, I couldn't fall asleep, so I was like, I'll read this, and it's just her, like, going into explicit detail of the only one night stand she's ever had.
Oh gosh.
I know. I was like, well, what else are you going to expect from Amy Schumer though, right?
Yeah, just no filter. I love it.
No filter. But speaking of that, like, I feel like you said you used to not do social media, but now you're all over the social media and you're funny. Like, I read in an article that if you could do anything in the world, you'd just be a live tweeter, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Me too. I love that.
I actually thought about quitting pharmacy school to go into being a copywriter. And I created a portfolio, but I've just invested so much time and energy into pharmacy school and money mostly that I'm scared to make the transition. So, I'm trying to get through pharmacy school debt-free. So that's an option for when I graduate.
But to be a copywriter, tell me what that dream looks like. Like, what does that job entail really? What you would want it to be?
I would want to meet with companies and chat about what they wanted their image to be and who they wanted to market to and what their ideas are. And then I would want to find stories that represented their idea of what they want their brand to be, and then tweet about it or write about it or make ads or commercials or yeah.
Well, you can totally do that. You can totally do pharmacy school and then decide to do that. do pharmacy thing for a little while and then dabble in that a little bit.
Yeah. It seems like you can either get a job that's stable and financially secure, or you can get a job that's fun. And it's almost impossible, it seems, to find a job that's right in the middle.
Totally. I know. Totally. Are you on? You're on Snapchat, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't use it all that much, though.
Oh, you don't?
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why I don't use Snapchat that much. I do. I go in waves.
Well, do you do the Instagram stories?
No. So I think that words are more my thing than videos.
Totally. Going back to running a little bit, before we finish up with our fun questions about what's hot in your life right now. If somebody asks you questions, a college runner who is thinking about going pro and is kind of on that brink of, not winning nationals, but good enough that they could run, what advice would you give them?
I would say if you think you have unfinished business in the track world, do it. Run professionally because it's time sensitive and you'll regret not doing it. Mm-hmm. But I would also say think about what you want to do post running and do small things to invest in whatever that career path is. So if it's volunteering, if it's doing classes, networking, I don't know, if you're into copywriting, then get social media and start live tweeting things. Keep that in the back of your mind. Go for the dream now, but don't sacrifice your entire future for that one dream. You should be thinking ahead.
Big picture too.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll always be intertwined with track and field?
That's the identity crisis that I've been having recently. I don't know how much I'll love it if I'm not competing. Uh-huh. And, there's a lot of really gross sides to the sport. I don't like how contracts are written. I don't like how, athletes are treated. I don't like how, USATF money is distributed. I don't like how athletes get taken advantage of. I don't like the drugs. I don't know. There's just a lot of things that I would have to turn a blind eye to, to continue really loving the sport.
But don't you think, people like you who are willing to speak out about that stuff, it's that's the only way change will ever be made, or, with the drugs and stuff, how does that change get made in the first place? How do we overcome that?
I've thought about that and had nightmares about it, and I'm not sure it ever will, which kind of makes me sad.
Right.
Just because there's too much money at the top. So,
yeah.
It's there's too big of an incentive.
Yeah. What is that as an athlete, when you're finishing a race and, the person who wins or whatever is found out that they were doping a year or two later. How does that make you feel, and how do you move on from that? Or do you move on from it?
You it's kind of weird because in the track world, you operate so much in your own bubble, mm-hmm. that it doesn't affect you quite as much as you would think.
Okay.
Yeah. Because you're so almost selfish. I'm not thinking about who won or that I got beat. I'm just trying to think about how I can improve. So, and then a lot of times when, like, when the whole Russian doping scandal came out, mm-hmm. we all knew that the Russians were doping. So, we had already calibrated our results in our head to it. Mm. So, like, at Prefontaine, I got fourth. But I was like, oh, look at the people in front of me. I actually got third.
Gotcha. Is that, like, I don't know if rewarding is the right word, but, like, to know that, like, you put in the fair work, like, that's where you really were? Or is it just, like, soul-sucking almost?
Yeah. So the soul-sucking part is when you first go into professional running, you think that you're going to just keep improving and become the best in the world. Like, mm-hmm. that's where your mind's at. And then you just keep getting beat down and beat down. And then you realize that, like, you can't compete with drugs. If you have somebody who's equal ability, who's on drugs, you will lose every time. And there's nothing you can do about it. Mm. So that's the soul-sucking part of it. It's not so much that, like, so-and-so beat me and then they got caught on drugs. It's just, like, the overall tone of, I will never be good enough because I choose not to partake in this aspect. Is, like, the it just kind of feels hopeless.
But what are these people that are doing this, like, when they think, like, oh, 20 years from now, when I'm talking to my kids about when I ran in the Olympics, but I wasn't clean, you know, like, what? How do they sit on that, you know?
I don't think they recognize that they aren't clean.
Oh, okay. Because they're being so, they're manipulating things so perfectly that they think, oh, I'm doing just under what would illegal be or something like that.
Well, okay, so think about how many terrible people you know. Okay. And then think about how many of them think that they're terrible. Nobody thinks they're terrible because they're like, their little internal press secretary is flipping the script. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of the dopers are just flipping the script in their head. They just have really good press secretaries. Like Lance Armstrong thinks that he legitimately won the Tour de France seven times. And his press secretary is saying, like, you weren't doing anything else that your competitors weren't.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
But I was, like, also thinking that with doping, it's kind of weird if you think about, like, the African countries doping. Mm-hmm. Like, they probably have no idea what they're doing. They probably mm-hmm. have a coach that's like, you should take this vitamin injection. And, like, this will make you better. This is what you're supposed to do. Like, it's almost like in college, if I knew so little about the sport that I would have been susceptible to, like, brainwashing, I guess.
Okay, you know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that in the U.S., like, we're knowledgeable and we know about doping and about cheating, and we're taught consistently that it's wrong and bad. So it would be hard to manipulate your mind into thinking that you're okay. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you think about the Russians, I almost feel bad for the Russians because they had pressure from their country to do these mm-hmm. things, you know? So it's like, it's not, the athletes get blamed, but it's so much more than the athletes. It's like the system and the coaches and the agents and all this pressure from these other people who are not on the starting line. Mm-hmm. So it's just like the whole system needs to be revamped, I guess, is my gripe about it.
Yeah. And you feel like if you stay intertwined with track and field and nothing ever changes, that you're just going to be like pissed about it for the next
years. Exactly.
When we watched everybody, of course, watched the 10K at the trials or at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I was like live tweeting it, and I had interviewed Emily Enfield before the race, and I kind of, like, watched that race with my jaw just dropped. I'm like, there's no way these women are running so fast.
Oh, yeah.
And then I came upstairs. My husband was working from home, and I was like, so, like, what's going on here? And he was like, there's no way those women are clean.
Usually performances that are unbelievable. Yeah. So that's, like, that's one of the really good barometers of is that performance dirty?
Yeah. Because the record was like 20 years old and it was a dirty record?
Right. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Okay, so I want to move on to a couple fun things, and then I know you've got this like 10-mile run weighing on your shoulders for the day, so I know how that feels to have want to get it done. What is hot in your life right now that you would think that our listeners would be into, maybe?
Journaling. I just bought some brand new felt tip pens and some brand new journals, and I have journal sessions every day.
What kind of journal did you buy?
So I have like commitment issues, and I can't buy really nice fancy journals because I'll mess them up with my thoughts. Uh-huh. So I buy this pack of like blank page sketch paper stapled together journals.
I know, it's like when you buy a new like calendar for the year, and like I have this big calendar that I use for my podcast schedule and everything, and I'm like, I almost don't want to write in it because I'm worried I'll mess it up and then, you know, I'll change dates and
you can't go back.
Right.
Yep.
And I'll mess up the prettiness of the calendar.
Yep.
Totally get that. What else? Anything else?
Well, I just started school, so school supplies are also hot. Mm. And I just created a copywriting portfolio for if I decide to go into copywriting, so that's also hot in my life.
Lots of goals.
Yeah.
Anything that's not so hot?
Not so hot. Parking tickets. Mm. And driving traffic in general. I just quit driving, you know. I don't think it's the closest parking spot to anywhere in my house that's legal that won't get me a ticket is my house. So closest parking spot to anywhere in the city. I mean,
do you guys live walking distance to like coffee shops and stuff?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's nice. What's the best, most recent book that you've read?
Well, this isn't, I read this book once a year and I just recently read it, but it's Hyperbole and a Half by Ali Brosh. It's my go-to for when I'm like stressed and need a laugh and a cheap thrill.
You are recommending some like comedy stuff that I don't know about. Who's it by? Yes.
Ali Brosh.
Ali Brosh.
It's, yeah.
Okay. I don't even know who that is. Who is that?
She's only written one book. She used to be a runner actually. And she started, this website where she draws cartoons and tells little stories about her life. And then she published a book about it. And I pre-ordered her new book, which is supposed to come out, like, this month. And then I got a message from Amazon saying that it won't be released until, like, 2024 or something like that.
What?
So I guess she was like, you know, screw this. I'm going to write the book on my own time and just, like, put in some very futuristic date.
2024. I mean, I know that when you have an idea to start a book, it's probably going to take like a good 2 years, you know, but man, 2024.
Right.
Do you ever think about writing a book?
Yes, but I don't think that I'm that interesting enough, you know,
like I
don't know.
People
I thought
would
about
totally
it,
like, buy your book.
Yeah.
Because you're funny too, you know, and you have a story, and then just reading that women's running article that you sent, like, when you're on the run with your friend and you're talking about online dating and how people don't want to do it because it's not glamorous or whatever, like that's like a chapter in a book, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've thought about it. Plus also like I'm one of the like big idea people that has no idea how to get from my couch drinking coffee to execution of big idea. So I need like somebody to hold my hand and be like, sit here and do this now.
I understand that.
Yep.
Do you and Steve, that's the boyfriend's name, right?
Yep.
Are you guys into any shows right now?
Well, we started Stranger Things like 2 weeks ago. And then I sneaky watched the rest of like the other 7 episodes while he was at work. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you could say that we were into it, except I kind of went rogue.
I feel like that's a big issue in a lot of relationships.
Yeah, it's, yes. I, a lot of times, pretend that I didn't watch them and then we'll rewatch them, but Steve always catches me. That's probably because, like, the theme song is playing in the background when he calls. not a spy, I guess.
That's what ruined Orange is the New Black, because that was actually one show that my husband was willing to watch with me that we could, like, come to terms on, and I sneaky watched it too much, and he was like, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Oh, no. Orange is the New Black is worth the fight. Like, there are some shows that are worth the fight.
Well, I'm trying to make Shameless worth the fight, and he won't take my bait. Because he wants to watch Narcos, and I think Shameless is almost too much of a comedy for him. Have you watched Shameless? It's really good. It's a little too much sex. Just throwing that out there. It's like a little out of control with that. But it's comedy slash drama, but he thinks it's more of a comedy, and he wants more drama, I think. So I don't know. Whatever.
Well, Narcos is such a boy show. We were watching it, and then I was starting to learn Spanish because it was the summer and I had nothing to do. And I thought, like, oh, I'll listen to Spanish lessons on the YouTube. And then I'll watch Narcos in Spanish. So it's, like, kind of learning Spanish.
You won't read but, the subtitles.
Yeah, exactly. So, I couldn't get past, like, the fourth ep on that.
Yeah, there was a couple of rape episodes that really turned me off that I was like, I can't even watch this. Although, apparently, they go away. There's no more. But, yeah, it's very violent, and I'm sure the storyline is good, though. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me and share your thoughts on everything that we discussed.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
And enjoy your 10-mile run, and I'm rooting for you getting Steve to do the whole thing with you.
Oh, thanks. Right. I'll tell him you said that for peer pressure.
Yes, tell him the lady from Skype.
Yep, the lady told from him. Skype. Gosh, and then when I closed my iPad, I was like, yeah, I think the problem is her computer's on mute. And Steve was like, she's still on there. You didn't hang up. Hey, I was like, no!
Did we figure it out, though? What was it? Do you even know?
Considering I changed from my iPad to my phone and now it works, I'm going to blame the iPad.
Okay. Well, because one other time I had the issue and I have no idea what to do. So I just turned my computer off and turned it back on and it worked. But that's always the answer. Like, oh, just turn my computer off and turn it back on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the solution for everything.
Right.
Restart.
Exactly. Totally. All right, Phoebe, well, thanks so much, and I'll send you an email and let you know when... I'm having a baby in, like, 3 weeks, so...
Oh, gosh, okay, yeah. Good luck with that.
Thank you, and so this will... I'm, like, loading up some episodes that I can, like, put out right after the baby comes, so it'll probably be, like, 3 or 4 weeks so that it's, like, preloaded and ready to go. Like, I didn't just interview Phoebe Wright 2 days after I had a baby.
Awesome.
So, all right, well, have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, thanks.
See ya.
Okay, thank you guys so much for listening to the show today. Thank you, Phoebe, for coming on and chatting with me. I have an episode that was so much fun to record next week. I'm talking with Claire Dietrich, who is an Army veteran. She went to West Point, and she's an ultra runner. So she's done 3 100-mile races, including Badwater, where she, at the time, set the record to be the youngest female to finish that race. Such an inspiring lady. I'm so excited to share her story with you. And a big thank you to our sponsor for this episode, Generation YouCan. You guys go to generationyoucan.com/another, use promo code another all caps, and get a 15% discount on their products. You guys just have a wonderful weekend, and as always, I will see you next Friday.